Welcome to episode 296 of The Lab. I'm Brad Barton.
I'm Phil Barton.
This is one in our continuing series on space and space travel. If you'd like to hear the other episodes, you can find them by visiting thelabwithbrad.com. It's twice in a row now. I didn't leave a space between thelabwithbrad and .com.
Well, you once left a monumental space.
It was, yeah, that was like 40 minutes long. That was a great day.
Are you compensating? I don't know.
All right, I need to make an announcement. This has to happen. First off, next week, no episode.
That's right. Happy birthday.
Yes, and we will be back on April 1st.
Cool. Do you mean it? Or?
Yeah, I do, actually. But because it's April Fool's Day, another announcement, we're going to take a break from all the space travel stuff. Mm-hmm. And play with something weird.
Have you decided?
I'm thinking weird. The case for faster than light travel, or maybe for the existence of God. I haven't decided yet.
I have a vote. Warp drive. Okay. Anyway.
Well, as long as we're talking about drives, let's talk about some rockets.
Hey.
So
nice.
The Apollo program is happening, and actually, the first glimmer of it happened all the way back in 1958, mm-hmm. Shortly after Sputnik happened in 1957.
They launched a satellite. Let's go to the moon.
Oh, man. By 1960, Kennedy inherits the whole notion.
Uh-huh.
He had actually campaigned on a platform of closing the technological gap, especially with missiles, that was perceived to exist.
I'm glad it was him, because the presidents that bracketed him, he speaks well, kind of, sort of.
Yeah, Eisenhower wasn't all that exciting, and Lyndon B. Johnson, he was a vice president. How good are they at talking? So they're doing the Apollo program, and they got a bunch of stuff on the drawing boards, but just like with the Mercury program, they have to test the emergency escape system.
Yes.
Which is the launch escape system, or LES. Or less. They might
have bloody acronyms.
Yeah, I know. Oh, it gets bad today.
Oh, no. Okay. A, B, C. Did I cover it again?
Just like back in the Mercury program when they took the Little Joe rocket to test all the hardware long before they bothered putting it in orbit. Mm-hmm. This time they used the Little Joe 2.
Oh, okay.
You remember the Little Joe? You got a kick out of it. Because it seemed like something we could do with, like, cut open a pop can and stuff it with bottle rockets.
Yeah, no problem.
Please don't do this at home.
Yeah. Very much teenagers playing with fireworks, yeah.
And now you're so used to the history of rockets to hear they came up with a new rocket design and hear about the chain of 4 or 5 explosive failures they had.
That's just par for the course, right? I mean,
the
it has
Little
to explode
Joe 2
once.
Actually did really well. Only had a few failures. Mm-hmm. Like I said, its mission was mostly to test the escape system, the LES. Mm-hmm. It also had to test the heat shield.
Okay.
Up at the speed that happens if you're coming back from the moon instead of just orbiting the Earth.
Okay, so how do you do
significantly
that?
Significantly faster. What you do is you get your altitude, point the nose down, fire the rocket again.
Yes, I knew it! Must go faster! Woo! Were any mammals harmed in the making of this
No
test?
Critters this time.
Okay.
They did have a little trouble with the parachutes on the capsule. On one test, the main chute did not deploy.
Oh.
The other two did. Though, and from the data, it looked like the astronauts would have survived.
Oh, okay.
Although it may not have been comfortable. They were testing some white sands. It was hitting the ground, not the water.
Oh, goodness. Yeah. When did we start thinking water was a good idea?
Well, water is a great idea for cushioning the landing and all, but it's expensive to go out. The reason they're doing a test on the ground is cheaper.
Yeah, okay.
One launch.
Mm-hmm.
One of the guidance fins got kind of stuck over.
Oh, okay.
And it started to spin along its length.
Yeah, okay.
Like an arrow or a bullet.
Bullet, I was
and
just
remember,
thinking bullet.
Like, we used to be a way to stabilize rockets, have them spin.
Yeah.
No, we're long past that. This is a problem. This is a malfunction.
This is not supposed to happen. Yeah, okay.
So eventually, the booster tore itself to pieces.
Oh, no.
But the LES worked.
Oh.
While the press is watching this impressive fireball in the sky, the capsule is landing safely on its three chutes.
Nice. Okay. What a great test. Not on purpose.
Yeah.
But
it gives you a lot of confidence in that system.
Yeah.
They did eventually do the final flight of the Little Joe 2,
mm-hmm.
where it reached the altitude they wanted to test at in that earlier flight. And then it started to tumble rather than spin. But that was on purpose. That was the test.
Oh, okay.
And once again, the LAS performed flawlessly. So
safe for humans.
Yes.
Maybe.
Well, the funny thing is it never got used. Like the LES is basically a tiny rocket stuck on top of the rocket.
Okay.
That can take you and your module away from the exploding rocket.
Mm-hmm.
That's the idea.
Okay.
But for the Gemini program, they went with ejection seats instead. And we talked about that on Monday.
Oh, it's
I want to talk some hardware.
Okay.
Because we haven't for a while.
Right.
And I'm jonesing, man.
Let me scoot my chair. Yeah, okay. Lean in. Ready.
I picked up more stuff about the Agena.
Okay.
And I'm relatively certain that's the way you pronounce it. A-G-E-N-A. So it turns out that it's a second stage put on top of an Atlas.
Okay.
The Atlas was like a stage and a half rocket.
Oh,
they called it.
Stage and a half.
Yeah. It had a couple of booster rockets, which I think were liquid-fueled rather than solid boosters.
Mm-hmm.
Hardly anybody even talks about the booster rockets for the Atlas, and one thing made it, okay, liquid-fueled. I'm used to them being solid boosters.
Yeah. I wonder how that meeting went. I mean, what is kind of two-stage. No, man. Stage and a half.
They started using them in the Mercury program.
Mm-hmm.
Part of the reason they went with the Atlas is, hey, you can inspect all of the engines easily. They're all right there on the ground.
Mm, okay.
Like if you take stage B and put it on top of stage A, you can't look at stage B's engines anymore.
Oh, yeah. They're hidden.
So then they put another stage on top of it.
Now it's a 2.5 stage.
Yeah, that's actually what they called it. It also had balloon tanks.
You've mentioned these.
Yeah.
They are a thing.
We've talked about it a lot. I never managed to get it into the show.
Are they made of balloons?
Made of fabric. And part of the they're lighter, right? But they had to keep them pressurized so they wouldn't collapse.
Okay. So what are they pump in air as they're losing their liquid?
I think so.
Oh. I thought all answers would be here today.
I was kind of wondering, you know, why bother? Why not just let them collapse, right?
Yeah.
But then it occurred to me that, hey, that's going to shift the center of gravity unpredictably.
Mm-hmm.
If it starts crinkling up, there might be pockets of fuel that never get out of them.
A great demonstration of chaos theory.
Yeah. Which you don't really want for your launch vehicle if you can help it.
Yeah.
Anyway, the second stage they stuck on top of it, the Agena, actually had an operational history before it was used in the Gemini program. It had launched satellites, and it launched the unmanned Mariner probes for Mars.
I've seen a lot of unmannedness.
Yeah, we were flinging hardware all over the place, and we'll come back and do whole episodes on it.
Is this a glorified robot?
Blink.
Does it have brains?
Well, they're satellites.
Okay.
And probes and so forth. So, no.
All right.
I don't really know yet. I haven't looked into it. I was planning to when we did episodes. Where are we? Oh, the Titan II.
Ah.
For some reason, I thought this was a solid rocket.
Right.
But it was a dual propellant hypergolic. Stuff that will catch on fire as soon as it touches the other liquid.
Oh, neat.
Yeah, kind of nasty, corrosive stuff.
Dangerous.
Yes. They did some studies looking at what would happen if the rocket goes up a little and then comes right back down and hits the pad. Terrible scenario. You don't want to have that happen. And in the Mercury program, they had a whole separate little tiny rocket system that would shoot the capsule away.
When
things like this were happening. Turns out the hypergolic fuel has a smaller explosion and resulting firestorm than like liquid oxygen and some other fuel.
Okay.
So they decided to go with ejection seats for the Gemini program.
You're on a rocket. I know. You're going how fast?
Not everybody thought this was a good idea, right? Mm. In order to get clear, they had to use a 20G ejection seat. So even if everything goes perfectly, uh-huh, that's a lot of G's. You can get seriously hurt.
Yeah. Well, better than dead, I guess. But...
yeah, I guess. There was one launch. The engine came on for a second and a half and then shut down automatically.
Ooh.
And meanwhile, up in the capsule, the instrument reading said they had lifted off.
Yeah.
And the mission commander had to make a split-second decision, pull the ejection lever or not.
Mm-hmm.
And he decided not to because he'd been in a launch before and he's like, we didn't go anywhere.
Experience. You can't beat experience.
Yeah. Okay. So in addition to that 20G... thing, the ejection seat would only be able to save you for the first 40 seconds of any given launch.
Mm-hmm.
And also, they don't seem to have been fully aware of how dangerous this was. It was pressurized with a pure oxygen atmosphere in that capsule.
Oh, no.
One of the astronauts in an interview later, he was saying, yeah, so it turns out if I'd pulled that thing, mm-hmm, you would have seen two Roman candles shooting off. Everything inside was saturated with oxygen.
Remember that better than dead? I wonder. Now I'm on fire.
Anyway, let's get out of here. By the way, I'd originally planned to do just one episode on the Apollo.
Really?
Yeah, that's not going to happen.
I'm not surprised, actually.
A lot of stuff happened.
It's the most famous because we were first.
Yeah, so they eventually settled on the Saturn rockets for launch.
Mm-hmm.
And there were a couple of models they used just to reach low Earth orbit.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was the Saturn V.
Okay.
Which is the big mama. 363 feet tall.
Okay.
Which is enough to die from if you just fall off the top.
The elevator ride was
a little precarious here. 33 feet diameter on the base. The first stage, which was the one that had to do the most thrust, was capable of burning 20 tons of fuel a second.
Wow. Where do you even get 20 tons? How do you burn 20 tons in a second? What? Is this a aluminum, a solid?
No, this was a JP1 kerosene rated
That's
for...
That's crazy.
And liquid oxygen, so...
JP1, I didn't know there was any other JPs, because diesel for army vehicles is JP8.
Ah.
And I didn't know there was any...
A lot of aircraft, I hear from my old Navy buddies. Not that I was ever in the Navy, but they were, and they're old now, and they're my buddies. They talk about JP4 and JP5 a lot.
Oh. I just...
And I don't really know what the ratings are, but this thing was under 300,000 pounds dry. Right?
Right.
And when it was fueled up, it was just over 5 million pounds. And that's just the first stage.
okay.
Second stage, dry was about 80,000.
Mm-hmm.
Full was 1.5 million.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. The top stage seems rather dinky by the time you get to it.
Right?
It's only 58 feet long. Its diameter is only 21 feet. So they assembled it inside this giant building.
Stacking
one stage on top of another.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
And some of the early Saturn rockets, they took a Jupiter series rocket,
mm-hmm,
strapped some redstones around the base, put a Titan on top of that, and an Atlas on top of that.
Let's just see if this works. Teenagers and fireworks. I'm telling you.
Well, the third stage, fully loaded, was a bit more than 250,000 pounds.
Jeez.
So kind of dinky. But the whole system could get over 300,000 pounds to low Earth orbit.
Yeah.
And a little over 100,000 pounds to orbiting the moon. So it was a beast. During the liftoff sequence, uh-huh, right? First thing that happens is about T-5 on the clock,
uh-huh,
the engines start up.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. They don't go to full thrust instantly because, well, you're going to hit the pad and there's going to be a shockwave. And you're going to want all that to stabilize first.
Oh, okay.
And then as you're lifting away, you got to deal with the ground still reflecting and all of that changing and so forth. What they did actually is they had hold down clamps.
Oh, you're kidding.
Yeah, you asked about that at one point, and you were talking about the shuttle, and I don't know whether or not the shuttle did, but the flipping Saturn V did.
Yeah. This makes me think of a helicopter pilot was talking about them lifting off and how it makes this kind of donut of air.
Oh, yes, the ground effect.
Yeah, so they have to compensate when they nose forward because they're going to drop a little. That donut stabilizes, and once they get past it, they lose that cushion of stabilized air.
I see, yeah, as they slide off the cushion.
Mm-hmm, yeah. So, yeah. Rockets, of course, they have to stabilize.
Well, they're flipping five engines in the bottom stage. Four on the outside rim to sort of stabilize and steer, and a middle one.
Mm.
Partway through the launch sequence, the first stage only burnt for about a minute and a half. But partway through it, they shut down the middle engine so that the acceleration doesn't get above 4 Gs.
Right. Humans.
Yes. And they dropped that puppy.
Uh-huh.
The next stage was liquid hydrogen and liquid oxygen.
When they drop, they're not in space yet. That's not going to burn up.
No, it's actually going to land in the Atlantic. Same with the second stage. Second stage burnt for about 6 minutes,
mm-hmm.
which is a good long rocket burn.
Mm-hmm.
Once the third stage was gone, the second stage was gone, the third stage fires for, I think about a minute to get them into a parking orbit.
Parking orbit, okay.
Yes. And now, if they're actually making a moonshot, which was not early in the program.
Let's see if it doesn't blow up this time, and we'll carry on.
Orbit around the Earth, pretty low, only 18 miles above the Kármán line, so about 118 miles up. Pretty thick atmosphere there, which is okay because they would orbit the Earth about 1.5 times, and then fire the third stage again.
Have you ever said Kármán line to me before?
Oh, good point. Official start of space.
Okay. I was just checking.
Now the thing is on the way to the moon.
Okay.
All right. Cool. You've got your command module, the CM, and the service module, the SM.
Go figure. Yeah.
And the combined unit is the command service module, CSM. I told you it was going to get bad. While you're on the way to the moon, you finally let go of the third stage.
Okay.
And just the CSM goes floating away, turns ass over tea kettle, and goes nosing back into the top of the third stage in order to grab, dock with, and then pull out the lunar landing module.
Yes, I have seen animations of this before, now that you mention it, but that was way back in science class. I didn't even know I had that memory. But what a fun trick. I mean,
I don't know. It's stuffed in here somewhere. The flying pup tent we used to reach the moon.
Hold on. Let me get my suitcase.
So they pull away from the third stage, and I forget what they do with it. They deflected it somehow. Mm. And I hear some of them went into a solar orbit.
Oh.
One guy was looking to get a meteor named after himself and accidentally discovered one of the...
I found one, finally! Oh, it's space junk. But historic.
Right. So you get to the moon. Mm. And now the service module,
whose
whole mission in life is to be engines and provide electrical power,
right,
fires.
Okay.
In order to make sure you're in orbit around the moon.
Cool.
Even before you got there, the astronauts would climb up inside the LEM, which is a nickname for the lunar landing module, and test all the systems.
Cool.
Once they're in lunar orbit, they unfold and lock the legs, apparently from inside the LEM.
Oh.
With all that practice with the extravehicular activities, if something had gone wrong, I imagine they could have gone out there with a wrench if they had to.
Oh, yeah. It's that important. It makes sense to give yourself time, you know, to be able to muck with something going
on. Yeah, actually, part of the mission, like the two people are going down to the actual ground, right? You got your pilot. Who, you know, pilots the craft. And the other guy who keeps an eye on all the systems and occasionally shouts out navigational data, like how high you are and how fast you're falling. So they'd lock the legs in place. They detach from the CSM.
Hmm.
And then the guy back in the CSM would look through the port and do a visual inspection of the LEM.
Oh, also a good idea.
Yeah, really, really. Wow. So next, the LEM fires a burn to change its orbit so that its closest approach to the lunar surface will be under 14 kilometers. All right. Now, once it's there, at its closest approach, it fires its descent burn. Now, the landing module, the LEM, was actually two stages. It had its landing stage and its takeoff again stage. The landing stage was the one with the four big feet, one of which had a little platform that they called the front porch and a ladder, right? Yeah, so you'd be going down to the surface, and sticking out of the bottom of each of these feet is a long rod so that it would touch the surface first. And then the pilot gets a signal that, yes, you can turn off your engines. They actually decided after Apollo 11 not to put the rod on the same foot as the ladder. Because once the weight settled, those things bent and even snapped off. They were afraid they were going to get the suit punctured.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Then they tool around on the surface for a while. And then they climb back up in the pump tent. I keep hearing rumors that the thing would collapse under its own weight. But this last time through, I didn't see that factoid once, so maybe that's nonsense.
Well, how do you build it on Earth?
Yeah, that's okay, the question, isn't it?
A lot of string.
It is a pup tent. Anyway, the landing module, or the landing stage of this thing, used hypergolic fuels. You remember them, they go burn as soon as you touch.
Heck yeah. Yeah. Super dangerous.
And nice, and they could throttle it. They didn't have to have it on full blast all the time. Nice. When they finally climbed back in their pup tent and hit the go home button, which I'm sure was enormously more complicated than just... Right.
Can he avoid hitting the candy like red button?
And then the ascent stage fires, and that was a solid rocket. Yeah. It was just get you up high enough and moving fast enough for the guy left in lunar orbit to come pick your poor little butt up. Then they climb back in the command service module, jettison the lander, and use their service module to do another nice long burn to head back for Earth.
Okay.
Huh. Then, just before reentry, they drop the service module, turn ass over to kettle.
To kettle.
That's a brand name. Troy, patent pending.
You know, acronyms. We're shortening things here.
So that the blunt end enters the atmosphere first. Hmm. This is an interesting part of the mission, because if they get the angle wrong, bad things happen.
Oh, yeah.
Either they're too shallow, and now they go zipping away from the Earth, possibly fast enough to end up orbiting the sun instead of the Earth, or in some wildly eccentric orbit that's going to intersect with the ground in a terrible way, and no fuel left to do anything about it.
Well, that sucks.
And on the other failure mode, as they call them, if you're going in too steep, is that the deceleration would be too great, and you'd be squished.
Oh, as a human, you can't take it.
Mm-hmm.
I gotcha.
At a deep enough angle, I imagine the capsule couldn't take it either.
Failure modes. That's an appropriate name.
It's the name of my new band. Anyway, eventually, not next time, we'll come back and talk more about the individual missions and the things that happened and all the good detail stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, very next time, I'm trying to get the usual ending and I'm having trouble here. We'll talk about that.
Screw it. I'll just say it.
See you then.
Bye.